The story you are about to hear is true.
Attention! All true...
She's alive! Alive!
Welcome to the Retroist.
There was a bit of a struggle to see who would control the television in my house when I was growing up, but there were rules around this struggle, and it was all about how old you were. The older you were, the more likely we were to be watching whatever you wanted to watch on the television. My parents were at the top, followed by my oldest sister, my next oldest sister, and then me. On weekdays, my mother made most of the decisions as to what we watched on television, except for when my grandmother was around, and then she would defer to her, which meant we were watching grandma shows often, which my sisters did not like, but I did. On the weekends, though, my father would step into the picture. He had a habit of either on Saturday or Sunday watching an afternoon movie. And he would watch generally whatever was on, but I quickly learned his preference was for movies in the adventure genre, often set in the late 19th century or times before World War II. He couldn't get enough of them. Now, generally, this wasn't family TV time. No one else in my house seemed to like these, but I decided one day to sit on the couch next to him and start watching it, and I found that I enjoyed them as well. They were filled with mysterious places, interesting adventures, and it made the world seem a bit big and magical. I had learned later that he had gotten his taste for these type of films as a young man, going to the theater, and from books. When I heard about Raiders of the Lost Ark, I could not contain myself. This was the perfect movie for me. This was the genre I had been growing up with in my house. Every weekend, I would watch a movie that could be pointed to as an influence of Raiders of the Lost Ark. The week it opened, I was in the theater seeing it. I was thrilled. I remember going home, thinking about how much I wanted to see Raiders of the Lost Ark again, and how I hoped there would be more movies just like it. And I was sad because my father would never get to see it, because he had passed away. People will often ask you, if you could talk to a loved one who passed away one more time, what would you say? And I think I know the answer to what I would say to my father, which is, would you like to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark together? On today's show, I'd like to talk to you about what is probably my favorite film of all time, Raiders of the Lost Ark. We'll talk about the people in front of and behind the camera, we'll talk about the music, the cast, and we'll throw in a few surprises here and there. We have an info-packed episode ahead of us, so without further ado, let's start the show. Raiders of the Lost Ark is a 1981 action-adventure film directed by the great Steven Spielberg. It was written by Lawrence Kasdan and is based on a story by George Lucas and Philip Kaufman. That's a lot of good people. So I'm going to read to you from the VHS box of Raiders of the Lost Ark. This is from the original release of the film. These tapes are not too hard to find if you're looking for them. They would re-release this film many times on VHS. There's a great one that came out before the sequel, The Temple of Doom, that you could look up. It actually has a promo for The Temple of Doom right on the box. But here we go. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Got that great poster on the front. Got the great logo. Image of Indy climbing down into the snakes. Image of him and Marion on the back. back, legendary filmmakers Steven Spielberg and George Lucas combined talents to create Indiana Jones, the bullwhip-cracking archaeologist assigned by the U.S. government to find the mystically empowered Ark of the Covenant before the Nazis can obtain it for their own evil use. Indy, Harrison Ford, joins forces with Marion Ravenwood, Karen Allen, and the two catapult from episode to episode of breathtaking adventure. Pretty simple, just a couple of sentences. Really conveys the plot of Raiders of the Lost Ark perfectly. There would be many releases of this movie on VHS over the years. As I said, my favorite might be the one that they released before Temple of Doom. There's also a 1986 collector's edition with some gold around the edges. Looks real classy. Indiana Jones is an archaeologist, bit of a grave robber, and he learns that the Nazis are trying to find the Ark of the Covenant. His former mentor, Abner Ravenwood, was obsessed with the Ark, and he goes to find Abner's daughter, who he had a relationship with years earlier. The Nazis, of course, led by Arnold Tote, are trailing him. He and Marion team up. They travel to Cairo, where he meets his friend Sala. They tangle more with Nazis. The Ark is found. There are snakes. He hates snakes. The Nazis go to this island to open the Ark. Now, the Ark is, as they describe it, a radio for talking with God, but it is more specifically where the Ten Commandments were placed in the Bible. So, can Nazis use this item that was delivered by God? If you haven't seen the movie, I don't want to ruin it for you. It's maybe one of the most dramatic moments. But that basically sums it up. What's interesting about this plot is that it is very episodic. And that has to do with how the movie was envisioned. And it was envisioned by a person with vision, George Lucas. George W. Lucas was born in 1944. He is a filmmaker, probably best known for creating Star Wars and Indiana Jones. Award-winning, legendary, considered a visionary, he happened to also come up with the idea for Indiana Jones under a different name. But he talked about this with another person, Philip Kaufman. Kaufman was born in 1936, also a award-winning director and screenwriter. Like Lucas, has worked for many decades. He's probably best known for the movies The Wanderers, Rising Sun. He did the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. His big film was the 1983 film The Right Stuff, but it could have been Raiders of the Lost Ark, which we'll get to in a few minutes. The screenplay would be written by Lawrence Kasdan. Kasdan was born in 1949. Another filmmaker would write Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he also co-wrote Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens, Solo, A Star Wars Story. Outside of the Lucasverse, he worked on The Bodyguard, The Big Chill, Silverado, the list goes on and on. Now, before we figure out how these people came to work on the different parts of the film, I should mention the director, Steven Spielberg, maybe one of the greatest directors of the late 20th century, maker of the modern blockbuster, has won many awards, directed some of the most amazing films of my childhood, including Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the Indiana Jones trilogy, and while he directed those, he also was involved with so many other great movies like Poltergeist, Gremlins, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and Back to the Future. Lucas had finished American Graffiti in 1973, his big breakthrough movie. That's when he started to think about making a movie like Raiders of the Lost Ark. He was thinking of the serials that he would see in his youth, movies like Zorro and Buck Rogers, and he wanted to make a movie modeled on those serials called The Adventures of Indiana Smith. And that name, Indiana, was named after his dog, Indiana, who was an Alaskan Malamute. Now, Smith would change, thanks to Steven Spielberg. Around the same time, Lucas was also trying to adapt Flash Gordon, but he couldn't get the rights. And he thought, maybe that's going to be a better project. So he put Indiana Smith on the side and started working on his own version of Flash Gordon, which would become Star Wars. Now, what I love about how Lucas is thinking about it is he's already looking at his influences as a child, and he's looking at the movies he loved, and this film, once Spielberg and Kasdan and Kaufman get involved, will become a kitchen sink of love letters to other films. Are you a fan of the Retroist podcast? Do you like more retro stuff? Why not check out the Retroist Patreon? Go to patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, access to the Retroist Discord, and more. Feel good about yourself and make a difference in the world. Support the Retroist. when Lucas did have this idea, he talked about it with his friend, Philip Kaufman. So they sat down and started working on the story and put in a couple of weeks' work. Lucas did get a lot of the basic stuff in. He saw him as a college professor and archaeologist slash adventurer, but Lucas had put things in that Kaufman thought made Indiana Smith a bit of a heel. Maybe his womanizing and going to nightclubs. He also came up with a very important part of the film, the idea of the Ark of the Covenant. This arc allowed Indy to play off what would be the greatest villains of the 20th century, the Nazis, and it took into account a lot of the Nazis' leadership's obsession with the occult. Now, Lucas wanted Kaufman to direct the film, but he had already signed up to do the film The Outlaw Josie Wales, and so Lucas had to pause the idea while he was doing Star Wars, and Kaufman went off to do The Outlaw Josie Wales. Unfortunately for Kaufman, while he had written and began directing The Outlaw Josie Wales, he was fired because he had artistic differences with Clint Eastwood, who would then go on to direct the film himself. And from what I was reading online, that artistic difference might have been that they were pursuing the same love interest. So we jump ahead a few years, and Lucas has made Star Wars, and he is very nervous and doesn't want to know how well the film does, so he takes a trip to Hawaii, and he invites Steven Spielberg to come along. So they're on a beach, sitting around, talking, and they start thinking about what their next projects will be. Spielberg was very interested in doing something like a James Bond movie, which would have been amazing. But George Lucas says, hey, I got this idea for The Adventures of Indiana Smith. Lucas was still thinking about Kaufman, but Spielberg expressed interest. And when Kaufman couldn't be persuaded, Spielberg stepped in. Spielberg chose Lawrence Kasdan to write the script. They only had a story at this point, no script. Kasdan hadn't been a professional screenwriter for very long, but after reading his script for The Continental Divide, Lucas said, this guy's great. And so in 1978, Spielberg, Lucas, and Kasdan went to a house in Sherman Oaks, California, and began developing what had been Lucas's story into a movie outline. This is where they started to come up with things they wanted to see in the movie, sort of a wish list of all the things they wanted. Set pieces that would work well in this serial format as you jumped from place to place, and a lot of it would make it into the film. Spielberg did not like the name Indiana Smith for a few reasons, but namely because of its resemblance to a Steve McQueen character, who I think most people would not even know existed anymore, named Nevada Smith. They all agreed that Jones would be a better surname. There were some differences of opinion. Lucas was much more out there when you read about what he thought Indiana Jones should be like. He almost made him seem like Batman. He had martial arts skills, was a bit of a playboy, very rich, which allowed him to fund his lifestyle. But Kasdan and Spielberg prevailed and made him much more of a adventurer, leaning on the archaeology part of it. Spielberg and Lucas definitely disagreed on what sort of character Jones should be, but they compromised, where he would be flawed, but he would still be somewhat of a role model to people. This allowed him to be funny at times when necessary and make him more relatable as a character. This is when they also decided to come up with Marion Ravenwood as his love interest. And there's some complications if you think about the age difference between the two characters in the film. Marion would be way too young for Indiana Jones to have dated her in the chronology of what they're saying. There's no correction on it, so I guess that's what's happened. Spielberg went on to direct 1941, and Kasdan took the time to start writing the film. He started watching serials and adventure films to get inspiration, and came up with what would be an amazing character, this grave-robbing archaeologist anti-hero with an amazing supporting group of characters. The script was, of course, way too long, like most scripts are, and so they went to trimming it, and by December of 1979, it was complete.
Everybody is thrilled by it. Everybody talks about it. Everybody loves it. Because it'll always be fun. Indiana Jones is back in Raiders of the Lost Ark. The return of the great adventure.
Trust me.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Lucas wanted to own Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he didn't have all the money he needed to do so. So he went around to different Hollywood studios asking if they wanted a part of it, and they all rejected him. Not just because of the $20 million budget, but because Lucas had very strict rules around it. Now he knew he was doing pretty well with Star Wars, and he was starting to flex his muscle a bit. He wanted the budget from the studio, but they would have no creative input, and he would have control of licensing and sequels. Studios thought this was unacceptable. They also didn't trust Spielberg. Even though he was a big success, he also tended to work over schedule and over budget. And that movie he had just been working on, 1941, was a critical failure. But Lucas wanted Spielberg now. The president of Paramount Pictures at the time was a guy named Michael Eisner, who would go on to run Disney eventually, compromised, and he agreed to do the film in exchange for the rights to any sequels and penalties if the film went over budget. Lucas agreed, and both Lucas and Spielberg would get a share of the profit of the films, plus their salary. They would bring in producer Frank Marshall, who had a lot of experience bringing in smaller films on budget. Spielberg believed he would be the best person for the job. Paramount said they could have a filming schedule of 85 days, but Spielberg and Lucas self-imposed a 73-day shooting schedule. It looks like Spielberg did not want to be known as the director who was always late. Spielberg usually took a year to do pre-production, but decided to push it up. They did it in 6 months, even though Lucas and Spielberg were both working on other projects at the time. They did extensive storyboardings with over 80% of the script represented. That meant 6,000 images, which really will help move things along when they start shooting. And there would be great special effects and stunt work. All of that needed to be coordinated. But before they did that, they needed to come up with a cast. And Lucas wanted to have an unknown to play the role of Indiana Jones, not someone who had been in some big film. And people considered for this role are now legendary. The lists include Bill Murray, Nick Nolte, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Tim Matheson, Peter Coyote, Jack Nicholson, Jeff Bridges, Sam Elliott, Harry Hamlin, and John Shea. Casting people really wanted Jeff Bridges in the role, but Lucas decided that he wanted someone not on that list, Tom Selleck. Now, Tom Selleck had auditioned and really wowed everyone, but he was obligated to something else, the TV series Magnum P.I. He would only be needed if Magnum was put into a full series. And Lucas and Spielberg asked CBS, can we get him 10 days early from his contract? CBS, realizing this guy must be a pretty big deal, decided to greenlight Magnum P.I., which made him have to drop out. That meant there was no lead for Indiana Jones just weeks before they were set to start filming. What's sad is there was an actor's strike that put Magnum P.I. on hiatus for several months, which would have allowed Selleck to be Indiana Jones, but it wasn't meant to be. Spielberg had seen The Empire Strikes Back and said, hey, Harrison Ford would be really good in the role of Indiana Jones. Lucas was not so sure. He knew Harrison Ford was great, but he didn't want to be a person who seemed to always be using Harrison Ford for everything. And he also didn't think Harrison Ford would commit to making multiple films. But Ford thought it seemed like a pretty good deal, and he was going to get a pretty good paycheck. So they signed the contract. Ford went into training to develop his physique and to learn how to do some stunts, especially how to use a bullwhip. They had their Indiana Jones. For Marion Ravenwood, they considered quite a lot of people. Lucas wanted Deborah Winger, but she had no interest in it. Spielberg wanted to put his girlfriend at the time, Amy Irving, into the film, but she was busy. So they considered people like Barbara Hershey, Sean Young, and Stephanie Zimbalist. Now, they had seen Karen Allen in the film Animal House, and they liked her in that film. She came in to audition for Raiders, and she ran away with the audition. One of my favorite what-ifs, besides the Tom Selleck one, is that Danny DeVito was approached to play Sala, a role that would go to John Rhys-Davies and well, but can't help but wonder what a Sala played by Danny DeVito would have been like at the time. You have Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. Harrison Ford is maybe one of the most well-known actors of the late 20th century because of his turns in Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he would make other great movies like Working Girl, The Fugitive, of course Blade Runner. Karen Allen made her film debut in the comedy Animal House, but then had a small role in Woody Allen's Manhattan, then worked with Philip Kaufman in The Wanderers and William Friedkin in Cruising, so a pretty good resume by the time she got to Raiders of the Lost Ark. She would then follow that up with Shoot the Moon and Starman, then in the late 80s, Scrooged, and would continue to work. The rival to Indiana Jones, Belloc, was played by Paul Freeman. Paul Freeman was born 1943 in the UK. For American audiences, he's probably going to be best known for Raiders of the Lost Ark. But he was also on TV in season 4 of Falcon Crest. He played Ivan Ooze in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. And he was also in Hot Fuzz. Ronald Lacey played Tote. He was cast because Steven Spielberg thought he had a resemblance to Peter Lorre, and I could see it. He's so villainous in the film, really great. The scene where he pulls out his hanger, and they're confused as to what it's going to be. Is it a weapon, a torture device, and it turns out he's just hanging his coat, is one of my favorites. He plays the role really well. Spielberg wanted him to have an artificial arm with all sorts of science fiction-y sort of stuff. But George Lucas talked him out of that. Would have turned the movie into something else. John Rhys Davies played Sala. That could have been Danny DeVito. Rhys Davies, Welsh actor, probably best known for two things. Sala in Indiana Jones and Gimli in Lord of the Rings. He has won many awards and has an amazing voice. Great delivery. He has a great voice. He did voice work in Gargoyles, The Jungle Book 2. Oh, and on TV, he was in Sliders, which was a great underrated TV show. Finally, Denham Elliott played Marcus Brody, Jones's friend. He's also a museum curator. He appears in Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, but is in a ton of other things, has won many awards. One of my favorite other movies that he is in is the movie Trading Places, a great comedy where he is having a lot of fun.
Can Indiana Jones escape from the forces of evil? Can he survive 13 fiendish situations? Will Indy make it all the way? Find out in Atari's Raiders of the Lost Ark adventure game. It's diabolically difficult. It's mysterious. It's never the same twice. And it's only from Atari.
Principal production began on June 23rd, 1980, and they would film in France, Tunisia, Hawaii, and England. They chose England, Elstree Studios, because Lucas had people that he had worked with on Star Wars there. And it was expensive to film this. At the time, it was running about $100,000 a day for on-location shoots. And they wanted to use very special equipment. Spielberg tended to do a lot of takes, but he cut it down dramatically, which is why they did all that pre-production work. And he said that that's good, though, because he's quoted as saying, "I didn't do 30 or 40 takes, usually only four. Had I had more time and money, it would have turned out a pretentious movie." Filming began in France with some Nazi submarine stuff. Then they moved to Elstree Studios, where they did most of their interior shots. They used Tunisia to portray Egypt in the film. Spielberg said it was one of the worst experiences in filming in his life because it was 130 degrees and people on the crew got sick from amoebic dysentery from eating local food. Spielberg stayed healthy by eating food and water that he had brought with him from England, but that didn't stop them also from getting really bad sunburn. Just, it seemed pretty miserable, but it looked great. Then they flew to Hawaii to shoot the Peruvian opening of the film. If you are a fan of looking up filming locations, you're going to want to go to the island of Kauai to see some of the shots they put in here. There would be a lot of improvisation in the film, which seems like it would have been a lot of fun, and it gave the actors the ability to kind of come up with things that define their characters. For example, when Harrison Ford decided instead of trying to whip the swordsman to death, he would just shoot him, which is one of the great moments of the film. But also when Karen Allen saw a moment in the script that she thought was out of character, the idea that Marion would try to seduce Belloc to get herself free. Instead, they came up with the idea of getting him drunk, where she would drink him under the table, which made a lot of sense when you think about other parts of the film where she wins a drinking contest early in the film. After 73 days, September of 1980, they finished filming. And Lucas said it was one of the best filming experiences of his life, mostly because there was no studio interference. They would do post-production work, and that mainly had to do with pickup shots and special effects. And the first cut of the film was nearly 3 hours long. And then Spielberg had to sit down and cut it down to just under 2 hours. That had to be even shortened further. The big problem here is that some of the things that would have been in the film, like a satisfying ending between Marion and Indiana Jones, just isn't there. And it's one of my biggest problems with the film. You can look online, there are a lot of really interesting deleted scenes that are talked about. For the most part, though, it's probably good they removed them, either because they didn't really add to the film, or more likely didn't look that great when it came to the special effects that were going to be used. Even if you have not seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, you've probably heard this. That is the Raiders March, or the Indiana Jones theme. The Raiders of the Lost Ark original motion picture soundtrack was released to accompany the film. It was composed by John Williams and performed by the London Symphony Orchestra. It was orchestrated by Herbert W. Spencer and Al Woodbury and would be released on Columbia Records in June of 81. And it would receive an Academy Award nomination. And it really should have won. But that year, Vangelis' score for Chariots of Fire was a big deal. And that is who won. John Williams has been interviewed about this soundtrack quite a lot, and he has said he really likes it because it allowed him to be very theatrical to help tell the story and to look back in time for influences that he could bring into the film. If you have not listened to the soundtrack, you really should, because you'll realize just how influential the music is in the film. The soundtrack was released on vinyl and would get several re-releases over the years in different formats. In 1995, a special edition was released with 30 minutes of new and extended cues, along with a booklet. If you can't track that down, a lot of that has been posted online. Another genuine legend put this together, John Williams. Born in 1932, he's a composer and conductor who's now worked for over 7 decades and has made music for some of the most recognizable films of the late 20th and early 21st century. He collaborated with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg repeatedly on films like Indiana Jones, Star Wars, Jaws, E.T., Close Encounters, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, Lincoln. But he also worked on other films like Superman, the Home Alone films, the first 3 Harry Potter films. It's an amazing list. I don't think there's been anyone in recent memory who is as important to film music as John Williams.
From George Lucas and Steven Spielberg comes the adventure of a lifetime.
Nearly 3,000 years, man has been searching for the lost ark. It's like nothing you've ever gone after before.
Winner of 4 Academy Awards, Harrison Ford, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
If you travel back to the summer of 1981, you would learn that there hadn't been a lot of big box office hits recently. Plus, cable television was taking off. People were watching movies at home. We have videotapes starting to happen. Combine that with rising film costs. And despite the fact that you had big blockbusters from people like George Lucas, the studios were now chasing the blockbuster. And nobody does blockbuster like Steven Spielberg. But people weren't so sure. The one that everyone expected to dominate the movies that year was Superman 2. But there were other great movies waiting to be released. History of the World, Part 1, a James Bond film, The Great Muppet Caper. Now, not everyone was aware of Raiders, but they soon would be. It was released on June 12, 1981 in the US and Canada on over 1,000 screens and would earn $8.3 million in its opening, making it the number one film of the weekend. Now, during the second weekend, it fell to number 3 because other movies had come out, The Cannonball Run and Superman 2. But by week 4, Raiders began climbing again. By week 6, it had regained the number one position and then would spend the next couple of weeks as the number one film. For 40 weeks, Raiders of the Lost Ark was one of the top 10 highest-grossing films, week after week. And by September, it was declared the top box office film of that summer, with a total gross of $125 million. Even after that, the film continued to make money. People made jokes that Raiders would be the biggest Christmas film of the year. It wouldn't leave theaters until March of 1982. But even by the summer of the very next year, some people were still playing it. And by July of the next year, Raiders had earned an approximate box office gross of $212 million, which made it the highest grossing film of 1981. Weirdly, the number 2 movie was On Golden Pond with $119 million, and then Superman 2 with $108.1 million. Raiders was considered at the time one of the leggiest films ever to be released because it stayed in theaters for so long. And it was also doing well around the world. It earned $141.7 million more outside of North America. It brought the movies back in a big way and made studios hungry for more blockbusters. Word of mouth was great for this film, as was critics. I was looking through newspaper reviews and people were calling it a classic. While some people might have found small flaws in the film, overall, everybody really enjoyed what they were seeing. And their peers seemed to agree. At the Academy Awards, Raiders of the Lost Ark would receive 5 awards, one for Best Art Direction, one for Film Editing, Best Sound Editing, and Best Visual Effects. The 4 other nominations it received, it should have won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, oh yeah, and Best Original Score by a long shot. It would win 7 Saturn Awards that year, receive 1 Golden Globe nomination, and would win 1 British Academy Award for production design. So, award winning. But, more importantly, what was going on in my local paper at the time? I printed out a bunch of pages from my local paper to read not only what my favorite reviewer, Lou Luminick, thought of the film at the time, but also what else was playing in my area, and what else was going on. This is a rare miss for Lou Luminick. I usually agree with a lot of his stuff here, but he's kind of down on Indiana Jones. He doesn't give ratings in his reviews, doesn't say thumbs up or thumbs down, doesn't even say, hey, you should go see this or not. But he kind of points to the excesses of what he sees in Spielberg's directing, and saying a lot of it is unnecessary and over the top. But at the same time, he recognizes the film as a Saturday afternoon lark, which is perfect. His last paragraph, I think, sums it up well, what he thinks of it. Raiders of the Lost Ark, which opens today at area theaters, is rated PG. Scores of actors are blown up, shot, impaled, crushed, and incinerated, but Indy barely gets to kiss Marion. Very accurate, Lou. Very accurate. I want to say that Lou was one of the hardest working reviewers in our local area. He not only reviewed Raiders of the Lost Ark that week, but he had to also review Clash of the Titans and Mel Brooks' History of the World. So let's see what's playing in my town. At this point, we only had the 4-plex theater, and they were showing Raiders of the Lost Ark, quite a lot of showings of that, Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams, Outland, a sneak preview of Stripes, only one showing of it, and Breaker Morant. I can remember seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark, going to see it at the theater, and then going to see it again when I walked over with my sister. We stopped at the convenience store on the way back to get a Coke. It was delicious. So advertisements in the paper at the time, Indiana Jones and Clash of the Titans are sort of tied for size of ad, although I will say that Raiders is maybe a little bit bigger. History of the World is just slightly smaller, and then everything else is smaller than that. Stripes probably comes in 4th. The 4 Seasons with Alan Alda and Carol Burnett is in there. There's Breaker Morant. Bustin' Loose was out with Richard Pryor. There was a double feature of the Blues Brothers and Cheech and Chong's next movie playing at a few places in my area. Jerry Lewis is hardly working. There's a small ad for Sean Connery's Outland. Tiny ad for Albert Brooks's Modern Romance. But you could definitely see the movies everyone was expecting to see this week were Raiders and Clash of the Titans. I just want to point out, if you went home that night after seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark at the theater, you'd go home to see primetime television maybe. Maybe you went to an early show. That night on TV, on CBS, was at 8 o'clock The Incredible Hulk, followed by The Dukes of Hazzard, and then Dallas. Then on NBC, you had Harper Valley PTA, Sanford and Son, and then a movie, Cotton Candy. And then on ABC at 8 o'clock was Benson, and then I'm a Big Girl Now was on at 8:30, and then that would be followed by Boxing, Holmes versus Sphinx, pretty good night. There's also 2 baseball games on local TV in my area, the Astros versus the Mets and the Yankees versus the Twins. I would probably have been watching CBS, The Incredible Hulk, and The Dukes of Hazzard that night, but I would just be thinking about Raiders of the Lost Ark. Although the UHF station in our area was showing The Shining. Interesting. Got another ad for the Video Shack, which I've mentioned in other episodes. Available on video cassette, the world's greatest lover. The Video Shack has it all. The largest selection of video cassettes and video discs anywhere. 5,000 different video cassettes in stock. There's also a ad for the Stereo Warehouse. I look at this all the time, try to find what I would have liked here, like the Technics SLQ-202, which is the turntable I would have wanted. A couple of boom boxes here. At Discomat, you could get Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers' Hard Promises for just $6.29. It's a great looking ad, a picture of Tom Petty on there. There's an ad here for a restaurant that my family would go to a lot, the Crow's Nest, which just closed recently. After years and years of being open, it closed. Really sad to hear that. My family went there for a lot of events. And finally, this is when Chicken McNuggets were coming out. So there's an article about the making of Chicken McNuggets. So much is happening. Raiders of the Lost Ark, you're heading to McDonald's getting some chicken nuggets. What a time to be alive. as I mentioned, in the early 80s, VCRs were starting to become a big deal, and studios were starting to see these as a revenue source. But Raiders continued to make money in the theater, so they didn't need to rush out copies until November of 83, when Paramount decided to release 500,000 copies of Raiders of the Lost Ark, priced at $40 each. Now, that seemed pricey for people who lived a few years later, but it was much cheaper than most stores were selling them, because you could easily see videos for over $100 back then. This was accessible, and then you would own Raiders and get to watch it as much as you wanted. By September of 1985, they had sold over 1 million copies of the film, which made it the best-selling VHS of that time. And they would continue to re-release Indiana Jones again and again over the years. On VHS, it went on well into the 90s. In the early 90s, McDonald's did a massive promotion where they sold copies of Indiana Jones movies at McDonald's restaurants. At that point, 10 million copies had been sold, and they expected millions more to be sold just from that promotion alone. By the turn of the millennium, they changed the name of the film from Raiders of the Lost Ark to Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, so it could be consistent with titles that would follow. Retcon. In 2003, it would be released on DVD, and then from there, it would continue to be released again and again in different formats, with new behind-the-scenes footage, featurettes, interviews, lots of fun stuff. For its 40th anniversary in 2021, it was remastered in 4K with a remaster of the original negative. It would be a box set at first with all the films, but then they would release them as individual titles in 2023.
You can travel to the ends of the earth to keep up with the Joneses, or to your local McDonald's for your own original Indiana Jones videos. Just $5.99 each with the purchase of any large sandwich all day long. The adventure begins December 16th.
Now, there would be comics and novels and toys based on Raiders of the Lost Ark that would be released. They would spawn so much, and I'm going to cover them and the sequels of the film in other episodes moving forward. But there was a whole lot of Indiana Jones mania, and I was all for it. Even after directing the other two films that would follow in this series, Spielberg still views Raiders as his favorite, saying the end result is perfect and that he would not change a thing. The film would catapult Harrison Ford into the stratosphere, making him one of the best-known actors in Hollywood for years to come, and he could fall back on Indiana Jones again and again over the years. One of the most amazing things about Indiana Jones is that it got people to study archaeology. It has been cited for an increase in people getting archaeology degrees after the film was released. The U.S. Library of Congress preserved the film in the National Film Registry in 1999 as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. The film would go on to spawn 4 sequels, the first of which would be in development while the original was still in theaters. And the other films that would follow would be massive hits and would continue to win over not just original fans, but new generations of fans to Indiana Jones. I don't think I need to tell people how great Raiders of the Lost Ark is, but if you want a movie to throw on a weekend afternoon when you're just sitting on the couch, I don't think you could find anything better. Yes, this film works great on the big screen. It is epic and it has spectacle, but it also fires the imagination, and that's perfect for sitting on the couch on a sleepy weekend afternoon. Thanks for listening to the show. For more retro fun, you can drop by the website at retroist.com. You can follow me on social media. I'm at all the major social media sites at retroist. The music you hear on the show is by Peachy. If you like what you hear, you should follow Peachy on Twitter and Twitch. He's at PeachyPixel8. That's the word Peachy, the word pixel, and the number 8. If you'd like to support the show, you could do so by giving it a 5-star review wherever you downloaded the show. It really is those 5-star reviews that help people find the show, and I really would appreciate it. If you'd like to support the show further, The Retroist is on Patreon. You can find me at patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, and access to the Retroist Discord, the coolest retro community on the internet. This is the 15th anniversary of the Retroist podcast. I released my first episode 15 years ago today. I want to thank everyone who's been listening to the show over the years. I really appreciate your listening and your support and your comments over the years. I wanted to do Raiders of the Lost Ark because it is a very special movie to me, like I'm sure it is to a lot of you out there. And this should be the first in what will be a series of podcasts covering the Indiana Jones original trilogy. I hope you tune in for that. Thank you again for 15 years of podcasting, and here's to 15 more. See you tomorrow, Indiana Jones.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.